At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
You know, Martin Ford, it would be fair, more fair, if I had in some way told you that you are being summoned to the radio for your expertise tonight. And I'm probably going to throw you some curves, but I have no doubt they're in your strike zone. So thank you for agreeing to be a guest on again so soon after the release of your book and the last time you were on Coast to Coast.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay. So I'm very interested in information robots. We'll put a pin in that for the time being. And I'll ask you to give a quick synopsis of the most recent book, Rule of the Robots, that just came out in, was it September of this year?
Yeah, it was. So Rule of the Robots, and the subtitle of that book is How Artificial Intelligence Will Transform Everything. And really, it's a book about artificial intelligence, which will, you know, it impacts as physical robots that can do, you know, things that manipulate the environment, but also just as software that has intelligence that can solve problems and learn and so forth. And I genuinely believe this is going to be our most important technology going forward. It's going to be a technology that truly shapes the world. I think it's going to touch every aspect of our life, our culture, our economy. In many ways, I think it will, you know, AI will come to be like electricity in the sense that it will just be ubiquitous. It will be everywhere. It will touch everything.
Right.
And of course, if you lose your electricity for a day, it has a huge impact on your life. And the same would be true of the applications of artificial intelligence that we're going to deploy. So I think it's truly going to be a critical technology,
yep,
and it will have many, many upsides, benefits, and also many dangers and risks that come with it.
Well, I think with the term I would use here in this case, in the comparison to electricity, is turnkey. It's just going to be, there's going to be an expectation. And much like turning on an oven, that it will get hot, that we will have this sort of casual relationship with the function of artificial intelligence. But I want to start there because I know that even the definition by some of artificial intelligence is kind of contested territory. What exactly, how do you define artificial intelligence versus just a car engine? Why wouldn't we say a car engine is an example of artificial intelligence?
Right. I define it very simply as being a machine or a software system that can solve the kinds of problems that human beings solve, you know, using our brains. And the most important aspect of that, at least right now, is the ability to learn. The AI applications that we have, often called machine learning, do have this ability to learn. When you were doing your introduction earlier, you mentioned the Roomba robot, right?
Yeah.
Now, that robot can learn. It does learn. It learns the dimensions of the rooms in your house that it's going to vacuum, right? Every house is different. You don't have to buy a different robot depending on how big the rooms in your house are. It learns that for itself. It explores and makes a map of the room, and then based on that can vacuum very efficiently. So that's
But wait. I don't know that I would agree with that. And so this is one of those reasons why I'm stepping in, because I think when we say learn, it reacts. But is it really learning in that if I turn it off and turn it back on again, it's going to retain knowledge of
the room? Yeah, I believe so.
Room?
I don't have one personally, but yes, it doesn't. My expectation is that it would. I don't think that... It's the case that every time you turn a Roomba on, it's just going around randomly, bouncing.
It is. I think it is. Because you can, this is why I think it's important that we really hit on these definitions and we try to understand them moving forward, because I'm not sure that a Roomba is any more of an example of artificial intelligence than, say, a bumper car, which will hit something, bounce off, go in a different direction, bounce off, go in a different direction. It's kind of like a bumper car with a vacuum cleaner attached to it, which is a synthesis, which is interesting. But it's part of why I think we get into, I'm afraid of some rabbit holes on this conversation, because as you know, many other of your colleagues or people like Elon Musk and others of your contemporaries would say that we overemphasize when we say artificial intelligence as opposed to just really smart machines.
Well, I mean, I think those two terms mean more or less the same thing. And there's no doubt that artificial intelligence has been hyped. And, you know, people like Elon Musk have made big promises that in terms of self-driving cars and so forth that have not yet been realized. It's going to take longer to get to, for example, cars that can really drive themselves and so forth. But going back to the Roomba, I've never, you know, owned one or used one. I mean, have you? Have you actually?
Yeah. I have two of them.
Okay. Well, I can't speak that to that specifically, but yeah. I can tell you that many other robots use similar technologies and they can learn and they
yes.
can learn to navigate, right? I mean, that's
yes.
what
yeah. That's what I'm separating out, though. And this is right. why I say this, because you're exactly right when we're talking about truly the idea of self-learning, self-educating, knowledge-retaining robots who can do just like what you said, that they can problem solve without us giving it input, right?
Exactly. That they can learn from the environment, from data. So perhaps the Roomba isn't very advanced, but definitely there are many other real robots.
Yes.
Artificial intelligence is really all about the ability to learn. So, for example, there are robots in hospitals that do deliveries, and they learn the route, you know, through the corridors, which door to go through, and so forth. Same thing with hotels. There are robots that can deliver things to your room in a hotel. So these are machines that absolutely do learn, right? They learn from the environment, and they learn how to navigate within buildings. So that's just one example of it, but there are many examples of algorithms that can learn. I mean, that's
right.
what really is powering all of this.
And I think that idea of algorithms that can learn, one of the things that we have as an example of that is these robo-writers that people may not even be aware of within certain companies and on certain subjects, robots are writing the news. That a robot program, an algorithm, a sophisticated algorithm, will scan data and then be able to write a rudimentary paragraph 2, 3, 4 that would express that data in an expository form, right? Using rules that had been pre-fed on rhetoric, but can then learn along the way and become essentially more sophisticated in the way in which it's communicating. We know this is already here. And so I think that's right in right to your point. Would you not agree?
Yeah, exactly. All the big media organizations, Bloomberg and so forth, use these kinds of systems. And what they do is, as you say, they look at data. They can figure out what's interesting, what's the story in that data, and then they can generate, a story. And you can read one of those stories online, and you won't know that it was written by a machine and not by a human being. You won't be able to tell. And
right.
In fact, everyone that's listening has probably encountered those and not realized it.
Not even realized it. Yeah. And
those are going to get better and better. Right now, they're most commonly used in areas that are fairly formulaic, like financial reporting for companies, how much earnings for the company.
Right.
Sports reporting, they're used a lot for that because you can, with the basic facts of a game, you can put together into a narrative. And it's not just journalism. They're used in many kinds of applications where you need to do basic writing. I know they're used to generate real estate descriptions. Like, if you go by a real estate office, you'll see these, a description of a house with a photo there, and it'll tell you about the house that's for sale. Those can be generated automatically based on just the basic facts about the house. So, there are many, many applications for this, and they're going to get better and better.
Yeah, I think you are 100% correct. When we hire a first or second year grad out of college and we have him or her write a story, it may not be fundamentally different in any way than a robo journalist program would do. And they would look in the end very, very much like a variation of each other, just a basic information slightly different, but the word choice, and especially when you're communicating straight data, you want to limit the amount of expression that goes into something like that.
Yeah, but they would definitely become much more sophisticated, going forward. They already are getting better. And as you mentioned, in many cases, they can match or even outperform an entry-level employee. So I do think going forward, this will begin to have an impact on jobs, and maybe in particular entry-level jobs, right?
Right.
Say people coming right out of school, because very often you hire those people to do more routine, repetitive, predictable types of things, and those are the kinds of things that AI and robots are the best at.
But, and I think this is an important safeguard, because I think it's a curb that we need to differentiate between what's real and what's Hollywood, and the robots as they are portrayed in the Iron Man series that have different personalities and react with audio and seemingly have their feelings hurt and other things like that. That's a ways away. And I understand that, that there are these Japanese cyborg type robots that become human facsimiles, and we will react differently perhaps to that than we would if it were just an elaborate bolt cutter, or some kind of welding unit from a robot factory floor. And so, but some of that may really just be our imagination. That really comes right down to it. They aren't any different. Just because we put a human face on it and some sort of rubbery skin, it really isn't any more sophisticated or more human-like than the robots that are on the factory floor all over the country right now.
Yeah, that's true. And as you say, it's going to be a long time before we have the kind of robots or artificial intelligence that you see in science fiction movies. I mean, that's
right. Okay, but that's the
minimum decades away, maybe 50 years, maybe even 100 years away.
There you go.
So the humanoid robots you see now, the robots that look like people, are for the most part, they're kind of gimmicks.
Right.
They're done almost like puppets, right?
And
they can do some very basic things. But the problem with robots of this kind so far is that they can't really do much in the way of useful things. So I think it's going to be a long time before we all have robots at home, that are going around doing all kinds of things, because that's really a big, big technical challenge. But it's going to be a very different story in workplaces. Inside an Amazon warehouse, they've already got a lot of robots, and those robots
sure.
get way better. That's going to have a huge,
right.
very real impact. But of course, those robots look absolutely nothing like people, right? I mean, they're not; they're just functional machines.
So, this to me is where the rubber hits the road. When you said 50 years into the future, because the book I just co-edited I only wrote about 15% of it or so on the bookends of the preface and the introduction and conclusion. And the rest of it's done by a series of sci-fi writers and specialists in fields. And one of those has been kind of haunting me since I read the chapter. And in effect, it is also perhaps not new ground in that some of this was addressed in movies like Blade Runner. But we do have an interesting problem coming up, I think, when it comes to self-learning robots. And I want your reflection on this. Is if we go into space, we will very likely any type of colonization, if we effectively, as Elon Musk wants to do and others do, want to start to build a colony on the moon or a factory in zero gravity that would make certain products that can't be made here on Earth. If we get to that point, the human to robot ratio is going to be way higher than it is here on Earth, because there will be many fewer humans, because that takes a lot of support to keep humans alive in space at that point, and many more robots to support those fewer humans. Do you accept that proposition?
Sure, robots of all kinds. And in fact, if you look at what NASA has done, I mean, basically the spacecraft they're launching are in fact robots, right? I mean, we you know,
right.
The ratio of those unmanned robotic space flights to, you know, manned, you know, with people aboard, which we haven't even had in a long time, from NASA is, you know, much higher. And I think that's probably the future for the most part.
So,
you know, in many cases, there's no reason at all to have people there.
But if we're going to have self-learning artificial, true artificial intelligence that is sophisticated and has that component that we started with, that in order for it to really be defined as artificial intelligence, it has to be able to either learn from other programs without human intervention or self-teaching, and be able to make a series and retain information just like any growing human would on all sorts of binary circumstances that we run into.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Abusers in Hollywood are as old as the Hollywood sign itself. And while fame is the ultimate prize in Tinseltown, underneath it lies a shroud of mystery. Binge this season of Variety Confidential from Variety, Hollywood's number one entertainment news source and iHeart Podcasts. 6 episodes are waiting for you right now to dive into the secret history of the casting couch, to explore the scandalous history of Hollywood's casting process. Listen to Variety Confidential on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.